Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From theblogulator.com.
This is Blogulator Radio, skewering and fawning over all things television for the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network.
This is Blogulator Radio, focusing on the best and worst of television. My name's Chris.
And I'm Jerksica.
And we have been gone for a little while.
Yeah,
it's true. So thank you, listeners, for coming crawling back.
And maybe, I think we're crawling back to them.
It's true. Please don't stop listening just because we took a break. I got a new job. We had to put our baby into daycare for the first time.
Yeah.
A lot of life changes, even more than, you know, when the baby was born and stuff. Yeah.
I think baby being born.
I guess that trumps most things. That trumps most things. Regardless, we have somehow found time for television still, both reviewing some new shows that are premiering soon on the networks as we reach into fall pilot season, and we
got so excited.
I know.
Fall pilot season is the greatest.
It kind of feels like a more mediocre version of Christmas, but it involves laying on the couch rather than finding a garbage bag for the gift wrap and making a big dinner.
But with an equal amount of disappointment.
Yeah, exactly.
And
socks.
Unmet expectations.
Yeah, socks. Right. Which of these shows are socks and which of these shows are pogo stick?
Pogo stick? That's the high bar of...
Yeah, no. Video painter.
I would agree. Okay. Video painter. Everybody wanted it. Nobody had it. And if you did have it, I don't want to hear about it because you were a spoiled brat.
And we also got to look back into the past. Of course, we'll have a Netflix pick of the week and look into the future with some TV news bits.
You know it.
So let's start with a review of the shows we watched this weekend. Two new pilots, which are available, should be, on your on-demand service, depending on your cable provider.
Might be online. Are they online?
I believe they're on Hulu Plus.
Okay.
If you're a subscriber to that. Fox has released two pilots in advance before they premiere on air later this month. One, which is called Ben and Kate, and the other, which is called The Mindy Project, from Mindy Kaling, formerly of The Office.
Now, what'd they do with her character on The Office?
I don't know, and I don't care. I think that she's written out for this final season of The Office, but I might be wrong about that. It seemed like Mindy Kaling was very much into doing her own project, and has, and might, like other people, Steve Carell, for instance, they're fine with slipping away into the shadows while The Office...
Yeah, but I think they're going to have to write some kind of story.
Because
I don't think they had a story, because I sort of watched The Office, like, through last season...
And you didn't notice anything about Kelly leaving?
No.
Who knows?
But I could have missed it. Who knows? I think that Fox could give NBC a run for its money on the comedy lineup. They're going to be airing different nights, so they're not in direct competition with each other. Right. I think Fox's comedy block is on Tuesdays. And the only reason I say that is not because we're going to talk about these two shows, and I like them, generally.
Yes.
But I don't think that their lineup with New Girl and Raising Hope, another show that we like a lot, is as strong as the current NBC block, minus The Office. But
even including The Office, I still think NBC has the stronger lineup, but they won't anymore because they're throwing away the two-hour comedy format.
I don't know why you have to jump on in there and steal my thesis.
I was leading up to that.
It's like, you're going to step on my punchline.
Okay, I didn't know you were going there.
What a jerk. I said but.
I didn't hear the but.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Because I do think they have the stronger block, but they're changing from that format.
Yeah.
They also seem like they're doing a pretty big upheaval on the existing shows anyway, firing like the showrunner of Community and other things. So... I think Fox really could kind of rise up as...
Right. And it's interesting because NBC keeps... I didn't know if... Are you not done? I'll stop interrupting you. I'm sorry.
Go on. You are the man.
Speaking of go on...
good show.
That's another show we reviewed a couple weeks ago. But in keeping with that idea that NBC has tried to throw away the two-hour comedy block, and I think they've tried to do this before, but they've also seemingly somehow wound up just doubling down on the two-hour comedy block to the point where they had three, maybe four if you include The Office, critically acclaimed shows on in a row, and yet they didn't get the audience needed, and so they threw it away. So then Fox comes in and says, all right, well, we're going to give it a shot. And Fox is definitely a higher rated network than NBC, but they've usually only been higher rated for their hour long shows like Glee, Bones, etc. So
Glee is an hour long.
Did you not know this?
Well, it felt like an hour, but I thought that was just no, my perception.
That's an hour long show.
Holy balls.
So I don't know how, I mean, the fact that New Girl was a pretty big hit, I think it might have been the biggest new sitcom hit last year, probably made them eager to try this out, and also helped resurrect some of the Raising Hope audience that they've lost over the course of its first three seasons. But I think that the best part about this is that we're not getting the same thing that NBC did, and I don't think they'll ever match the awesomeness that was watching Parks and Rec, Community, and Up All Night in a row, even though Up All Night you can also make the argument about whether or not it was as good as the other two. But I think the what Fox is doing is smart, because they have four different shows that are different in plot, different in character dynamic, but ultimately they're all kind of the wacky show aimed at a younger audience. And I think that that's a smarter way of doing it than what NBC did, which is they usually had similar creative teams behind them, but they never didn't really have like a demo that they were trying to go with. Like, there's no demo for a show about a Parks and Recreation office in Indiana. There's no demo for a show about, you know, disparate people from varying backgrounds coming together at a community college and having parodies of Pulp Fiction and spaghetti westerns.
Except you.
Right. And critics in general.
I think you, people that live in Pawnee, Indiana, and work for the Parks Department, actually think that's a real
place. I don't think it is either.
But yes, I think that's probably it. I was going to say, too, that they're, you know, Fox is approaching their comedy block without the need, you know, like NBC did, to also show, like, how wacky Indians are. And then I realized that there's the Mindy Kaling Project, right, in which, even in the pilot episode, she kind of, like, makes a couple jokes about, like, her race in the context of the culture around her.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about Mindy Project first, since that's the one we watched first, and I think it's probably one of the ones you were most excited about for this pilot
season. But you have to remember that I was pretty much excited about everything and basically peed my pants over the pilot of Animal Practice. But this is one of the this is a pilot that I can, like, strongly stand up and proudly admit that I was very excited for, and it met my expectations. It was very, very funny.
Okay. So, we mentioned Go On earlier. Did you like it as much as or more than Go On?
It's hard to compare the two. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, they're both comedies. I laughed out loud at both of them. Mm-hmm. I lolled.
Right.
A little bit.
I think they're pretty on par.
A little lol. But they're different. They're mm-hmm. different shows. They're different concepts. I don't know.
Some similarities I saw in it is that you've got a strong anchor in the protagonist who comes from a previously successful role in a previously successful sitcom. And simultaneously, it's about not just about them, but it's about the people around them that both bug them and
keep them grounded. Like the ensemble quality to it,
right?
I suppose the thing I like, I think, better about the Mindy Kaling Project, and I think, well, Go On might get there, but Go On didn't have as much like slapstick hijink humor.
That's true,
which I appreciate. And it was a cheap form of humor. But man, is it funny.
I'd say particularly the opening sequence in the Mindy Project pilot is good enough to rest on its laurels and make me want to come back for more. There's an amazing sequence where she starts out pretty cliche, you know, the woman or the man, the character starting off at the ex-lover's wedding and drunkenly saying something or trying to stop it or making a speech when there's no plausible reason why they would be making a speech. But then where it goes from there much more interesting. It involves bike ride, a pool, her calling a Barbie doll hot yet mean. And it's pretty wacky, but at the same time, it definitely gets you into Mindy Kaling's head to the point where it's not wacky for the sake of being wacky. It's because that's her true voice. And it shines a lot more here, I think, than she ever did as Kelly on The Office, for instance. Mm-hmm. Even though she wrote a bulk of the episodes for that show as well.
Well, because I think it has a lot of the wackiness of her character Kelly on the show, but mm-hmm. she's a lot more relatable.
Yeah.
So she's not like like a female Steve Carell or anything.
No,
she's
of course,
not like the buffoon character. She finds herself in buffoon like situations, but like the setup for all of them are very plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up, like, for me, I ended up thinking, like, I could definitely find myself in several of these situations.
Right. I think, the way you described it, and also the fact, the thing we're missing is that, while, yes, it's focusing on her and her romantic exploits, it's also an office comedy. It's her and her coworkers at a hospital. I think, is it a maternity ward hospital? Are these...
I don't think she's even... She doesn't... She's at the hospital when people give birth, but she's
her
OB.
Own. Yeah.
So she has a clinic.
Right.
That's why we get lots of jokes about, like, her coveting clients that have insurance.
Right.
And, correct. Like, I don't know.
It's a different take on the office, on the hospital comedy or the office comedy.
And I like that she's a doctor. Like, yeah. I think that makes it, I don't know.
And she's a really good doctor.
Right. That she's a really good doctor, because I think that stands in contrast to, like, some of the, like, ridiculous social mistakes and general inappropriateness that she has.
And
not in a way that's, like, House MD, where they're, like, crotchety but genius, but just, like... This is a relatable character who's very successful in one sphere of her life and has, like, constant exploits in another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have been very easy, because most shows, I think, when they have a female protagonist, have them, like, in very... Like, there's a very limited set of professional careers that they cast female protagonists in. And I think that's why Parks and Rec is so interesting, because that's different.
That's the number one thing I thought of.
But they usually have, like some kind of media...
Right.
Career. Like some
nondescript media job.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that it makes it more grounded, and also makes it for a more interesting dynamic between not just her and her romantic exploits, for instance, but also the other characters on the show. The whole cast does pretty well in conjunction with her, but it seems like her romantic foil, the guy she's inevitably supposed to end up with, played by Chris Messina, it's kind of interesting. I found myself going back and forth between liking him and hating him throughout the episode, which I think you're supposed to, right?
Right.
But at the same time, it's not in a way that plays tritely like the usual will-they-won't-they relationship does. I mean, it's pretty aggressive, and I mean, I think that's, again, part of Mindy Kaling's personality and voice in her writing, but it's not the usual will-they-won't-they relationship. I'll leave it at that without spoiling too much.
So watch it.
Yeah. There's also a pretty good supporting cast that hopefully gets more lines as the week goes on. One interesting part is that originally Richard Schiff was supposed to play her boss, and he's actually in the opening scene, at least in the on-demand version of the pilot that we watched, Toby from The West Wing. But then in the later scenes in the episode, and then supposedly later on for the rest of the series, Stephen Tobolowsky, famous character actor, is going to replace him. Not boss, where hospital she goes to for her patients, whoever's like the on supervisor or whatever. That's who shows up, and he's a good character. He's actually also a TV nerd and movie nerd himself, and he has his own podcast, The Tobolowsky Files. So it should be interesting to see how they play up, which I hope they would play up his fanboy as tendencies himself. Okay, so that's Mindy Project. It's on Fox, and it's airing later this month. Check your local listings. The other show we watched was also from the Tuesday night lineup that Fox is trying to make succeed is Ben and Kate. We'll see. Starring Nat Faxon as Ben and Dakota Johnson as Kate, brother and sister, who... interesting enough, have this last name Fox on the Fox network.
Phoning it in, Fox.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But
maybe it's just subliminal, like, you're just supposed to... It'll help associate the show.
Right, exactly. The weirdest thing about this is you wouldn't notice it by watching him or looking at him, but Nat Faxon is an Oscar-winning screenwriter for The Descendants, and he... co-wrote that adapted screenplay with Jim Rash, who plays the Dean on Community. Mm-hmm. And just, like, those two people, like, in a room together with a typewriter is, like, a really funny idea to me. That they came up with a very, you know, touching and profound, moving, yet also funny, comedic script for The Descendants.
Well, I didn't know that, and that actually makes a lot of sense, because what I was going to say about the show is that based on the premise alone, you wouldn't think that it would be successful. Like, it would be very derivative of so many, like, mid-90s romantic comedies, like, right. movies. Like,
Man-Child Brother.
Like, Jerry Maguire, like, single mom and her, like, precocious kid.
Yeah.
And this really, yeah, the brother-sister relationship, like, a Kate and Allie type
exactly,
situation. Yeah. Like, it could have easily just gotten, like, saccharine, and the comedy could have just been based on this idea of, like, oh, isn't that kid cute?
Yeah.
Kids say the darnest thing, and her brother is such a, like,
he sure idiot. Can't grow up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, failure to launch. Ah.
Exactly.
But it isn't that way, and I was going to talk a little bit about why, but I think knowing that at least the main male character on the show wrote The Descendants, I feel like that explains a lot, because he approaches that character with more nuance, maybe, than...
Exactly, which doesn't make sense, because he's a goofy-looking guy, he talks goofy, and yet there's a weight to his performance that doesn't put it in the category of derivative man-child.
Right.
And, I mean, I think he was more impressive to me than his counterpart, Dakota Johnson playing Kate, but I think that the fact that he's able to do that with one of the main characters, and also I saw Promise and Lucy Punch as the best friend, Echo Kellum as another side kind of friend that hangs out with them, but there's a, like Mindy Project, there's an ensemble quality that seems to be brimming there in the pilot, like waiting to work well, and it'll hopefully come to fruition in future episodes. But okay, I think...
Maybe it won't.
It won't. It could not. It could not.
We'll see.
But, like you said, the fact that it's got kind of a paper-thin premise actually tends to work to its advantage. I think, similarly, New Girl, I mean, people were just calling it the Zooey Deschanel show because it's kind of a lame premise. Girl breaks up with boyfriend, moves in with new group of guys. And it's very kind of lightweight, and yet for the best sitcom sometimes, that's what you need, is a lightweight premise to focus on the characters and the writing, so that you grow to be a part of its world rather than focusing on a high concept or something like that.
Having made that analogy, then, are you saying that New Girl is one of the best sitcoms?
No, and that's the thing, is that, and going back to what I was talking about with comparing Fox and NBC's comedy lineups, is I don't think these are necessarily, like, critically acclaimed, like, cutting-edge funny shows that also have heart, brains, etc. I think these are lightweight shows that have promise, and maybe with some strong direction. For instance, Mini Project seems to have most promise.
I was going to disagree with you on the Mini Project and say that I think that that's an exception.
And it could be.
Ben and
but
Kate
it could be.
Fits into the model of the other shows during that block.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, like the Zooey Deschanel project. No, like New Girl, like Raising Hope.
Yeah, well, Raising Hope's another interesting example, because that's kind of, if there's one that doesn't fit with the others, it's probably that one. But at the same time, Raising Hope tends to have really great episodes that are very heartwarming without being saccharine, and very, and even possibly, like, very, you know, much deeper than your average show about a family raising a baby, and yet it's uneven enough that it fits with the rest of the lineup, and I could see that happening with the Mindy Project as well, just because this pilot's very strong, and because we put a lot of faith in Mindy Kaling, because she's funny and insightful, doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to win out over her producers or Fox in general in
the
trajectory of her show.
I think the best you can hope for is that she's able to push the line as much as, like, Raising Hope did.
Yeah, and I would be more than satisfied with that. I would much rather have, you know, two shows that can be funny and smart at the same time, and two shows that, maybe not so much on the smart, but they at least feel lived in. I like New Girl. I ended up going on many episodes in that first season. There's 24, I think, which is a lot.
24 episodes?
Which is a lot for nowadays, even though that was average for, you know, as recent as 5 years ago. But that's a lot of episodes.
Back in my day, our sitcoms had 25 episodes.
I went from liking the show at first more than I thought I would, to kind of getting bored with it, to back 5 episodes of this or so of the show, I got back into it. And never actively hating it, exactly. And maybe that's as much as we can hope for, not actively hating something on Fox.
That's actually how we file shows here.
There you go.
At the Blogula Radio. We file them, you know, by category, so you can look up a show in the derivative man-child section.
Right.
Or a show in the didn't incite hate section.
It's not as bad as you think it is.
There's also the peed your pants, peed my pants section.
What goes there?
Several episodes of Community.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha. Peed your pants in a good way.
Right. Little bit of Cougar Town.
Right.
Your bizarre self-taped videos about what you imagine Jim Rash
and Nat Faxon being in a room together with a typewriter. Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's what Fox has in store for the first part of their pilot season.
Thanks, Fox.
We'll be checking back in. Some other pilots are coming up soon, and we'll do our best to keep on with the pilot reviews. We'll be right back here on Ballgator Radio to give you our Netflix pick of the week, and stay tuned as well for some TV news bits. Thanks for listening to Ballgator Radio, courtesy of the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network.
See ya.
Be back in a bit.
Back here to talk about our Netflix pick of the week, which is
Scrubs. If you haven't heard lately, we have a Netflix sponsorship here at Ballgator Radio, and we want to make yes, sponsored. Go to bit.ly/blogflix to get your 2-week free trial courtesy of Ballgator Radio and the Netflix. No, yeah, Netflix is part of it, but also Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. It's a little late, and I'm tired.
It's 8:30.
Are you kidding me? It's 8:56. It's almost 9 o'clock. I have been up since 5 a.m. Let's talk about Scrubs. This is a show that all 9 seasons are available on Netflix.
9
seasons.
9.
We'd like to bring you a classic pick, something we recommend you check back in with if you haven't seen it in a while, or if for some reason you have managed to live in the 2000s without seeing a single episode of Scrubs, then go find it on Netflix. Go to bit.ly/blogflix for your 2-free-week trial.
I think you can find it under the Derivative Manchild section.
Exactly. So tell me, Jerkska, why'd you pick Scrubs for this Netflix pick of the week?
So the thing with Scrubs, and it's ridiculous 9 seasons, that's crazy.
It's way too many seasons, first of all.
Is that Scrubs was something that I think for people in our age group has just sort of always existed, right?
Right.
Either in new episodes or in syndication, and it's something like nobody really cared if it was on, at least amongst our group of friends, but you didn't actively seek it out.
It's talking about things we actively don't hate.
Right, right. Yes. Now, there was a period of time where I did actively hate Zach Braff.
I as well.
I just feel badly for him now, so I don't hate him as much. Braff notwithstanding, I've come to revisit and love Scrubs and feel like it. I should have given it more credit when it was originally airing.
And I would tend to agree with you. The biggest reason probably for that is because of our recent love for Bill Lawrence's newer show, mm-hmm. Cougar Town.
As well as, I don't know if Bill Lawrence was involved in it, but most of the cast, a lot of the cast was involved with Clone High.
Right, which preceded Scrubs.
Right. And so there's something about that cast that's kind of grown together, and they're really funny together and play off each other that I didn't appreciate when I saw Scrubs the first time.
And I think, I mean, what I initially wrote off about Scrubs as kind of a instantly judgmental 20-year-old was that, it's the ER spoof, and yet it grew into its own world so much that I didn't realize it, and I just kind of assumed it's the ER spoof with Zach Braff, who's kind of full of himself, and it's too wacky for me to genuinely enjoy.
Right, and it's not really an ER spoof.
No, it's not. It just happens to be an office comedy that's in a hospital and came out and premiered on the heels of a lot of the success of those hospital shows in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if it came down to, choosing an era of Scrubs that, based on syndication and what I've seen, at least since then, I would tend to like the middle years of it. I feel like when we go back and watch the beginning of it, it still did have kind of a trying to gain its footing for the first couple seasons, in which those characters didn't meld together as well as, for instance, they did in an animated show like Clone High.
Mm-hmm.
But when it hits its stride, I think there's probably 3 or 4 really good seasons of Scrubs that I didn't really knew were as coherently put together in a way that most sitcoms really weren't in the early 2000s.
I will say the thing I don't like about Scrubs is there are those episodes that just kind of like try to like have some kind of like meaning or message.
Right, and then they the Modern Family syndrome, as
yeah.
I call it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But aside from that, I think there are some really funny episodes. Particularly, I agree with you, in the middle seasons where new characters appear.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan appears later.
Yes.
Who plays, what's her face, on Cougar Town?
Ellie
on Cougar Town. As
also, that's also Bill Lawrence's real-life wife, Krista Miller.
Oh, mm-hmm. Really interesting. I'm learning so much. And she's a really good comedic foil to one of the doctors on the show. So
yes.
Yeah, check it out.
Scrubs.
Revisit it.
I honestly, there's 9 seasons on there, and if you had to focus on just the middle ones and just cut bait before the whole debacle where they moved from NBC to ABC.
You know what? There's 9 seasons, and you're no Superman.
That's so right.
Don't
take this upon yourselves. There's no reason to.
I'm no Superman.
Oh, good reference. I think that's another reason why I didn't like it.
Because of the theme song.
Oh, it was such an annoying theme song. Well. Same thing with Malcolm in the Middle. There it is. That's the theme. That's the thread. Malcolm in the Middle, also a supposedly good show that I missed out on because I hated the theme song and Frankie Muniz. I hated the Scrubs theme song and Zach Braff.
Yeah.
But Donald Faison, I hope that you find something better than what you're currently doing. The show The X's on TV Land.
I know, man. I don't know. It was a downhill slide, right? So he started with Clueless, right?
Mm-hmm. A high point. That's boom.
One of the preeminent films of the 90s. Then Slide to Scrubs, still pretty good.
Right.
Getting a lot of exposure.
I think Turk is probably the funniest character that I didn't realize actually was funny when I initially watched or had Scrubs on in the background in his early
20s.
And now,
The X's.
Mm-hmm. Too bad.
Come on,
bad.
Donald.
Let's take another quick break. Reminder that you can go to bit.ly/blogflix for that free 2-week trial. Get your fix of Scrubs and other past Netflix pick of the weeks. We've talked about Cheers, and I'll pick next week's to look back on something classic and available on your Watch Instantly service,
Woot.
Netflix. We'll be right back with some TV's news bits on
Blogulator Radio.
Welcome back to Blogulator Radio for our final segment on this week's edition of the show that skewers and fawns over all things television. We have some TV news bits for you.
That's my newswire.
That should be a thing that you do. I'll add some reverb to it. That'll be good.
I'll work on that.
And we'll have the cat meowing in the background. That's a nice touch. We talked to you last time about one thing in particular that so much of the nerdy TV community is excited about, which is Joss Whedon's return to the small screen.
Oh my!
Drop
that one onto the pee in my pants section!
The Buffy creator has come back on request of Marvel to create some kind of Marvel-type show with their comic book characters, and it's finally been announced what that show will be. It's S.H.I.E.L.D. It's what everybody thought it was going to be. It's not anything very unpredictable or exactly Peter Pants worthy, but because it's Joss Whedon, we can hope that he'll turn it into something Peter Pants worthy.
Or at least pants droppingly exciting.
So, for those wondering or unsure, S.H.I.E.L.D. is the name of the governmental organization in the Avengers that kind of sends them out on their missions, but they also, you know, there's many issues where they don't deal exclusively with Captain America or Incredible Hulk or anything like that. What? What?
Funny, like, this thing.
Like, I'm talking very matter-of-factly.
Yeah, like, it's a real thing. Like, they don't deal exclusively with any one client, like Mr. Captain America or the Hulk. I just picture, like, some guy.
Or the Man of Irons.
Yeah, in a business suit with his briefcase and his portfolio, like, talking about their portfolio of clients.
So they're not contractually obligated to include the Norwegian.
They're not
Thunder God.
They're not employees. They're more consultants.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
So they don't have to pay them benefits or some shit. I don't know.
But they're likely going to focus on more small-scale heroes and or villains that S.H.I.E.L.D. will try to contract out. New characters. Who knows what they'll be, if it'll be more of like an FBI-type show and less fantasy or superhero, but it'd likely be at least some crossover. Otherwise, I can see many fanboys getting pissed if they try to just make it a boring FBI procedural or CIA fangirls. Procedural. What's that?
Or fangirls.
Or fangirls. Fan people. Fan...
Or fangirls more forgiving or something.
I don't know. It's just the fanboys become the, you know, the... What do you call it?
Misogynist word choice?
Patriarchal word choice, right. Yeah. Nevertheless, it's still Joss Whedon, and I think we can hope that he'll at least do something interesting in terms of engaging banter between characters and expanding mythology.
And it won't be The S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a terrible show.
Okay, that's... Yeah.
What?
We watched maybe 8 episodes of The S.H.I.E.L.D.
That is a lot of episodes for how crappy it is. And because we watched it at the same time we were also starting to watch The Wire, I confused them in my head and thought for a year that I hated The Wire. Okay. Also, is the guy in The S.H.I.E.L.D. the same guy that was on that show?
Superhero show?
Ordinary Family?
No Ordinary Family, yeah.
Michael Chiklis.
And he's also going to be in this fall's Vegas on CBS.
Why do they keep giving this guy chances?
I don't know. A lot of people like him.
He's so attractive physically.
A lot of people like him. A lot of people like The S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm not sure I can agree with anybody, but...
You're sure you can't agree with anybody about anything?
No, I...
And that's why you have a podcast.
I'm so far gone. I have no opinions.
Well, our opinions are valid, Chris.
That's true.
But I don't know if the lack of an opinion is valid.
That is... What? Okay. My opinion is that... The S.H.I.E.L.D. had promise, but I could not get on board with it, and I don't understand the appeal of Michael Chiklis as an actor.
Luckily for us, Michael Chiklis is not in S.H.I.E.L.D., that we know of.
No. How did we get here? Let's get back on track. Happened.
I'm trying, Chris. I'm trying. Okay. I was the one that got us off track.
Okay.
So, moving on. Piece of TV news.
Oh, God, I lost the article.
Is the apparent... bidding war, feeding frenzy going on in Hollyweird about the new Michael J. Fox comedy.
Yeah. The star of Spin City and Family Ties is allegedly coming back. All these stories, people coming back to the small screen as if they left it for greener pastures. Michael J. Fox actually has not been on TV recently. He's had pretty big guest starring roles in seasons of The Good Wife and Rescue Me. He still got it. Those are more dramatic roles, but now him coming back into sitcoms.
What?
I don't know, talent. Charisma.
Charisma?
You don't think Michael J. Fox
you
is charismatic?
Said that with like so much judgment. And no. It was weird. It was just a weird emphasis. You're way tired.
Charisma.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of charisma, Michael J. Fox, man. I don't know. I don't know if I'm into it.
Why? What? Okay, he's teaming up with the director of Easy A, Will Gluck. Which is a fun movie, and I think it has some TV tendencies with it that could be translated to the small screen.
Well,
and
Fox should win the bidding war because they already have characters named Fox.
Oh yeah, good point. Michael J. Fox.
I mean, that's just a clear
Ben and
fit.
Kate Fox.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they'll probably use that in their pitch to him. The writer of several episodes of Cougar Town and Arrested Development, Sam Laborn. So, with that pedigree, now would you watch it?
I'd give it a whirl.
Give it a whirl. You can give every show a whirl. You literally watch every pilot.
Comedies.
Yes, exactly.
I watch the dramas, too. I watch it all.
We're getting loopy. Who knows what it'll be about other than a loose log line that it'll be based on Fox's life. And so, that could mean that it... could have a dramatic or dramedy twist to it. but based on his struggle with Parkinson's, maybe, or who knows, maybe it'll be just about, maybe it'll be a meta thing, like episodes where he plays an actor who's struggling to make it back into the big times. Jerks is currently turning her hair into a mustache, and it's fun, and she's far gone, more far gone than I, perhaps.
Well, we didn't inform the listeners that we're podcasting from our carbon monoxide nest.
Next on the TV news bits agenda, you're better at than me. There we go. Speaking of movie stars coming to the small screen, Jodie Foster, who I don't think ever has really been a TV person.
But speaking of a fox.
And I'm a big Jodie Foster fan.
I know you are. It's weird.
She is coming to Showtime for what has been termed by the AV Club the Female Sopranos. So with their current or soon-to-be loss of both Weeds and The Big C, Showtime is trying to refill their arsenal of female protagonist shows. And it seems like the next thing they're going to try is a mob show, but from the female perspective, and I don't even know if that necessarily means, like, mob boss wives, or it'll means females that are in the power position of the mob.
And Foster's in it?
No, she's directing.
Just directing.
Directing, okay. Correct. She tends to be more of a director nowadays anyways, which I wish she was in front of the camera.
Yeah, you're weird, Chris.
I think, there is one thing that she directed on TV a while back. It's a Tales from the Dark Side episode called Do Not Open This Box.
Tales from the Dark Side?
What?
I don't think we've watched
it. It was the off-brand Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, so like a long time ago.
Yeah, like early 90s.
Huh. I never watched Tales from the Crypt either.
Oh, man. I stayed up late when I wasn't supposed to for that.
I was going to say, your mom let you stay up for that?
No, she didn't know.
Well, she knows now, Chris.
Because she listens to my podcast about television.
And you'll never get video painted.
It's called Angie's Body. It has a title, and it's she's working with the writer of Heroes, Rob Fresco, at least one of the writers of Heroes. And it kind of depends on what season he wrote, because if he helped with first season, maybe this guy has some skill, and if it's a later season, I think he maybe has a snowball chance in hell. But let's see, because if Jodie Foster's involved, I think it at least will have some kind of prestige attached to it, because it's hopefully will be cinematic. But nevertheless, it seems like this log line, a shrewd, sexy, and when necessary, lethal woman, means that it'll probably be more on the mob ends of things rather than the family end of things. Though maybe it could still be both. Sopranos was able to balance both.
Shrewd, sexy, and... I don't know,
shrewd, sexy, and seductive? That's the same as sexy. Shrewd, sexy,
something
and...
something that means lethal.
And soon charm?
Okay, now you're just playing with words.
Sounds. Okay, and lastly...
I'm sorry, everyone.
Another TV's news bit has to do with a movie star. We have Michael J. Fox, we have Jodie Foster, and now we have...
Eddie Murphy!
That was okay. You did not need to say that. You're going to wake up our baby. Beverly Hills Cop is going to be a TV show, but Eddie Murphy is not going to revive his role as Axel Foley. Instead, it seems like he's... I don't even know if he's going to be a producer or what. Anyways, CBS wants to do a Beverly Hills Cop show, which makes sense because they're in the cop show business. It will be a procedural, and they also make sure to mention that it will be some kind of light and or family style procedural. So something the whole family can sit down and enjoy, a smart-talking cop that maybe has a sidekick named Judge Nelson. Or no, Judge Reinhold. I always get those two confused. Judge Reinhold.
They both part of, like, the Rat Pack or something.
And are they both part of the Rat Pack? Or just part of the 80s?
No, I think they're both part. I mean, Judd Nelson was in...
Well, Judd Nelson was, but was Judge Reinhold?
I think he was.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
You're not thinking of Anthony Michael Hall?
No.
Because Judge Reinhold... Okay. I'm not gonna talk about Judge Reinhold on a podcast for more than 30 seconds. That just...
You already have.
Oh, shit.
Some things that we know about this show, other than it's based on Beverly Hills Cop and Eddie Murphy may or may not be involved, is that if Eddie Murphy's involved, he wants to play the protagonist's father and show up from time to time.
Picture him just like wandering in the background.
Right. It's not going to be written. It's just going to. I would actually enjoy that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people guessing as to who would get this coveted role to play Eddie Murphy's son. Jay Farrow from SNL. Donald Glover, if Community ends.
That's what I was going to suggest.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
I think that if they do, here's the thing, is so many of their cop shows try to cash in on one-liners, but they never actually have done, I think, a cop show that is a straight, like, action-comedy hybrid.
Yeah!
Right.
What about, like, Michael Ian Black?
God. I would watch that as well.
Twist.
I think the benefit to making it an action slash comedy or a procedural slash sitcom is that something that many people haven't cashed in on since Fox's huge success with Glee, for instance. It's an hour-long comedy, and yet there's no other really shows that followed that format, that broken out of that the box of the half-hour comedy or the hour-long drama, and that could potentially be interesting. It might still be, you know, boring mysteries that are solved by the end using contrivances, but that might not be as important as the jokes or the characters. And who knows? It's a cop show, and yeah, so
they can always
who cares
add
that much? But oh yeah, cop rock.
Cop rock. Rock out with your capo.
That'll be the tagline.
Come to CBS this fall.
Did you see the Beverly Hills Cop movies? Okay, maybe we should just.
I have not seen the Beverly Hills Cop
movies. We should do that before the show happens.
I think so. I agree.
I enjoy them. Let's end this podcast before I fall asleep.
That concludes TV news.
Thank you.
I don't know why there's a cat.
Because there was a cat in the background last time.
Dear listeners, I apologize. Thank you for taking this very rocky roller coaster ride with us through TV land. And as always,
our opinions are valid.